them to Ariel Helwani's MMA Show.
It's week two of the MMA Reporters right here on ESPN. I want to thank everyone who sent in their very excited feedback after we rolled this out last week. Wow, everyone was so pumped up. We're back. The beat goes on, as I said. It's a very exciting time here at ESPN. Very exciting time to be covering mixed martial arts. And I'm happy to be doing this show because I missed doing the roundtable. So I'm happy to see that everyone is excited that we're back. The feedback has been great. So let us keep the train rolling along. And I'm very excited about this particular show, my friends, because I've been doing this kind of show for a long time, but I've never done it with our two panelists who are joining us this particular week. This is exciting. A couple of noobs in the house. First off, to my right, ESPN.com/MMA editor, the one and only Greg Rosenstein is here making his debut. Greg, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Pumped up.
Yes, it's great to have you. You sound very pumped up.
Excited.
Wow, geez.
I'm very excited.
Okay, sorry to take you away from your normal desk job, but it's good to have you here. Also, the voice you just heard is of one Phil Murphy, who is a jack of many trades here at ESPN. Phil, tell the people what you do here, because you really do a lot. You're the ultimate utility man.
Jack of all trades, master of none.
Okay.
I think is what's going on my business card. I host SportsCenter for International, do a lot of gambling stuff for International. So SportsCenter in Africa, formerly, currently Australia, some updates for the Philippines, Caribbean, and then dabbling in MMA when Greg allows me to.
Wow.
Every once in a while.
What a resume.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, though. MMA is your true passion, right?
It's absolutely my passion. I was on the train with Brett and Brettos and Eric Tomiso back in the day, scrapping to get us to UFC 172, UFC 175. So having you on board and having now the rights, it has been a dream 8 years in the making for us. So it's finally amazing to see UFC content on SportsCenter with regularity,
yeah,
and not just in SportsCenter, but now a priority, which is awesome.
Okay, so let us stay on that note. Saturday night, the new era commenced. It has come and gone. We are now fully into it. Brooklyn event was fun. Had its highs, a couple of lows, but overall I think it was a success. And of course, as the company put out afterwards, everyone very happy with the subscriptions. Personally, I feel like Chael and I deserve most of the credit for that, you know, the last few months of work that we've been doing. But it's a great time to be covering MMA here at the Worldwide Leader. Greg, let me start with you. I want to get both of your opinions on this, and then we can move on from Saturday night, because I still think that it's being debated, and I quite frankly don't understand why it's being debated so much, because it feels pretty cut and dry. Was the stoppage early, or was it just?
Personally, I thought the stoppage was a little bit early. I think he could have gone a little bit longer, especially as Dana said after, you know, a championship fight, two guys with belts. That said, I think I'm a little more in the minority in that I didn't think it was that crazy. Mm. Daniel Cormier saying it. He thought it was the right call in the moment. And then I thought that Henry was in full control at that point. So maybe it could have gone a few, you know, maybe 10, 20 seconds later. We could have seen what Dillashaw would have done if he got up and broke out of there. But I think there was a very good chance he was going to get finished right after that. I did think it was slightly early, though.
Yeah, I hate to just agree with what you're saying, but it did seem like a finish was a foregone conclusion there in the seconds afterwards. It felt like one, two, three more shots from Cejudo would have finished Dillashaw. When I saw it live, I mean, I've watched enough fights to where you have that feeling when a fight is about to be over, and it seemed like TJ was given a second to recover, didn't, and then he hit that left hand flush as TJ was getting up square in the face, and you have to trust the referee, an experienced referee, whose experience I think was unfairly diminished after the fight. He was
couldn't
being
more.
Right. Talked about like he was, you know, on some local, you know, five-letter long acronym regional MMA card. I thought it was a fair stoppage. Could it have gone an extra second or two? I guess, but I don't think it needed to. I think it was certain enough of a conclusion that I didn't have a problem live. I've watched replays. Of course, it always looks worse in replays, but I thought the stoppage was fine, and I think it's a little weird that we're still talking about it days after the fact.
Yeah, and great point on the referee, Kevin McDonald,
15 years.
He's not from New York. It was said that he's some local referee, and that's actually a pet peeve of mine when they go to these, you know, not new to, I don't want to call New York a new territory, but it's new-ish. And these guys get opportunities, these referees, these judges who don't normally get to ref or judge big fights in Nevada. He's not that guy, right?
And I think that given a little bit of the dog and pony show that's happened in New York in the past with right. Towelgate and Yoel Romero getting suspended for leaving the cage for 60 days, I don't know if people were looking for an opportunity to criticize the NYSAC, but I thought all in all, the refereeing, the judging, and that was all largely fair. So part of me wonders if people were just anticipating a problem with New York since it has only had MMA sanctioned for a few years. I don't know. But I just wanted to say I thought it was unfair criticism and inaccurate yeah. criticism, moreover, of the referee that night.
Okay, so where do we go from here? Because on this Wednesday, I feel like it's time to now start looking ahead. Henry Cejudo told me on Monday that he has a meeting scheduled with the UFC later in the week. He's going to make his case for the rematch. TJ Dillashaw wants the rematch, and he's essentially saying, I don't care at what weight. I just want to fight this guy and beat him. Let's say, Greg, you are the UFC. You're Dana White. You get the call. What are you doing? Let's start with Henry. What are you doing with Henry next?
I think you're going to have Henry go up and wait, and he's going to fight TJ Dillashaw for bantamweight title.
Why? And now, I'm not asking you what's your prediction. I'm asking you, if you're in charge, what are you doing?
I mean, that's a tough one, because I do think that that's the fight that's going to be made. I think it would be nice, though, to see Henry, who's been pushing for the flyweight division, trying to say how he saved the division, to kind of keep it going. You know, I don't necessarily like fighters bounce around divisions. So, personally, I would love to see him fight Joseph Benavidez and have TJ fight the winner of Asuncao and Marias. But I definitely think that just based on money and everything that he could bring in, that it's going to be him bumping up.
What would I do? I would say if Henry Cejudo is trying to save the flyweight division, which is what he was campaigning leading up to it, you can't win a title and then leave the division.
Right.
Especially when there's a capable number one contender like Joseph Benavidez. Oh, by the way, the last guy to beat Henry Cejudo in a split decision. And you look at Joseph Benavidez's record, too. It's not like this guy is some scrub. He has 5 losses in 32 fights, 2 to Demetrius Johnson, 2 to Dominic Cruz at bantamweight, and a very close loss to Sergio Pettis, which I believe was a split decision.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some dispute there as well as if he even would have gotten the nod in that fight. Very capable number one contender. And listen, Cejudo Dillashaw doesn't lose value. It's like after we did Connor Diaz and then the rematch, everyone wanted the trilogy fight right away. Keep that in your back pocket. That's not going to lose value if Cejudo and Dillashaw run that back in 2020. I know MMA fans don't like to wait, but I think Dana's a good enough promoter to know that fight is always there at 135, but it all comes down to their bigger picture intentions. If they do want to usher out the flyweights and they do want to close that division, then yes, it would be Cejudo Dillashaw at 135, giving into public demand and giving them credence to do away with 125.
You find
altogether.
It weird that he hasn't come out? He said on Thursday at the press conference, I'll tell you on Saturday what I'm going to do with the division. And then on Saturday, he's all salty and doesn't say what he's going to do. Is it a little weird to just be keeping us in the dark? Because I think the consensus was, oh, the reason he's not telling us before is because it's fait accompli. It's done. He's getting rid of him. Now, I'm not really sure what he's thinking. Is that not weird to you guys?
It is a little weird. And I think deep down, this is just me guessing, he thought TJ was going to win. And then mm-hmm. it would be a much clearer decision. But then it unfolded like it unfolded, and now it's, you know, is it worth keeping it around? I don't know.
And I think that's exactly it. Things change all yeah. the time, and we've right. seen Dana come out after fights and say, oh, so-and-so's getting the next title shot at your given weight class. I believe Misha Tate, did she get cut in line? Now I'm reaching back in
yeah, Holly Holm.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's happened before that things change, and Dana, in the past, not being short on opinions, people would criticize, oh, he changed his mind, he screwed this fighter over, or what have you. I think now he's a little bit more savvy, and he's not going to make a commitment to something. He says, I'll tell you after the fight. And I don't know if he expected as dominant, as fast of a finish as Henry got in that fight. Now he needs to figure it out, talk it over with Cejudo, go back, talk to his matchmakers, and see what the bigger picture play is going to be.
Here's one narrative that I haven't heard, and it kind of came to me this morning, and I feel like it's really worth pointing out, because TJ took a lot of crap going into this fight when he said, I'm being sent down to kill the flyweights. And I think he's taken a lot of crap afterwards for the way he handled the loss. And I'll ask you about that in a second. But I actually feel like the flyweights owe TJ Dillashaw a debt of gratitude. And here's why. Number one, if he would have said, no, I'm not going down to 125. You come up to fight me. You want a super fight? Okay, come up to fight me. And then he loses in 32 seconds. Now you really can get rid of the flyweights, because
Henry's the champion, and it's a very easy way to phase out that division. So that's number one. But number two, I feel like he has actually propped up the flyweight belt. I feel like he's actually made it into a hot commodity because he wanted it so badly, because he spent 12 weeks getting down to 125 and almost killing himself and changing his whole life, right? His whole lifestyle to get down to 125. It finally made the flyweight division to me, and the title in particular, a coveted thing, an important thing, something that we've been talking about now for the last few weeks leading up to this fight and still talking about after the fight. So in a weird way, it feels like TJ Dillashaw actually did all the flyweights a favor. He gave them more attention, more pub than anyone, including DJ, did in the past.
And let's not forget the platform either. A lot of fans who aren't accustomed to watching UFC fights, 570,000 new subscriptions, the lead-in of the Fox portion of the,
Yes.
A lead-in to the ESPN portion of the card, the four letters ESPN portion of the card was UVA against Duke. And all the people who are watching it, the numbers that are coming out are astonishing. A lot of, for lack of a better term, casual eyeballs on the flyweight belt, and you have a champion in Henry Cejudo now who may have won some fans over who hadn't yet seen him fight before or weren't at least aware of him.
Right.
So I think that's why Dana, Sean Shelby, and company are reassessing now.
Right. I mean, think about this. Has there ever been a DJ title fight that was as big in terms of publicity? I mean, what do you think, Ariel?
Well, he's headlined on Big Fox before. So he's had that spot, I think, three times in the past. So you can say yes. But in a weird way, TJ coming down from 135 to 125, for me, made the title feel more important, because here's a guy, because the 35ers in the past were always like, okay, the 125 belt, everyone kind of looked down at the 125 belt. The queue of contenders were never really looked at as strong as in other divisions. I think everyone had the utmost respect for DJ, but not quite for his, you know, his resume. Mm-hmm. And that's no knock on him. That's just, you know, the talent pool that he was dealing with. TJ coming down, for me, made it feel more important. And I would also argue that the way in which the fight ended was actually great for both TJ, the UFC, and Henry Cejudo, because it was controversial to a degree. It was quick. TJ now goes back up to 135 and says, okay, I got screwed down there. I'm staying here. Henry could say, oh, I beat this guy. And now I think, or I hope, the UFC will say, look at Henry Cejudo. This kid is a star. This kid is charismatic. This kid is shooting his shot with Nikki Bella. This kid is being talked about on all kinds of platforms. He did great on First Take and Get Up. Why would you get rid now of his division, the division in which he is the face of, where he just beat the winningest champion, where he just beat the bantamweight champion, and make him go up to an unnatural weight class? It feels like it was in a weird, I know 32 seconds was too short, but it feels like it was the perfect ending and the perfect solution to their flyweight issue.
And not only was he great on Get Up and First Take, but also SportsCenter Australia.
Yes. Oh,
for the record,
yes.
As many
Thank
people
you for that.
Are aware. And you have ready-made title fights in both weight classes coming up as well. Marlon Moraes and Rafael Sanciao are about to fight, and two guys with very capable number one contender resumes
yes.
to fight TJ Dillashaw after the fact. Already mentioned Joseph Benavidez. But how about this in super fights in the modern era? I know GSP beat BJ Penn back UFC
94.
Yes. I was going to say 74.
Ah, close.
2009. In the four super fights since Demetrius Johnson's weight class, the one that he dominated for so long, Henry Cejudo dethrones him. Then the flyweight beats the bantamweight.
Mm.
In the women's side, the bantamweight, Amanda Nunes, beats Cyborg.
Mm-hmm.
Conor McGregor, 145, goes up in weight, beats the heavier opponent. Daniel Cormier beats the heavier opponent. So all that we're saying about how the heavier opponent has a distinct advantage, here we are, four super fights in the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. The lighter fighter won all four.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great point.
And that's what I was going to say next, which was, if he goes up and he defeats Dillashaw a second time, you know, what's the possibility of him just wanting to stay at bantamweight? And then there's a whole mess now at flyweight in terms of what they do right there.
Well, they would just get rid of it at that point. I think if Cejudo went up and beat Dillashaw at 135, we're already seeing guys not get their contract renewed at 125.
Now you're really giving them a reason
Absolutely.
To get rid of
right.
it, right?
That's what I'm saying. Do they get rid of it, or what happens?
Yeah, I think you would go to guys, contenders like Benavidez, and say, put on 10 pounds or go to Asia.
Right.
Right.
It's contradictory to say, I'm the guy who wants to save the flyweights. That's my only issue with everything that Henry has been doing over the past couple of weeks. You can't say, I'm going to save the flyweights, and then the moment you win, say, I'm going up to 135. Mm-hmm. Now, I will say, he's been consistent. He has said this from the beginning. He initially wanted to go up to 135 because he wants a chance to make history, right? But it's just, it doesn't work with the narrative that you're trying to sell us on. So stick with the, so to answer the initial question, stick with the, I'm the flyweight king. I'm the man who saved a division. Stay at 125. fight a guy who beat you, to your point, Phil. Joseph Benavidez, that was a phenomenal fight, right? A fight that I wish went five rounds. Mm-hmm. Give us that. Joseph now gets another crack at the belt with DJ gone. And let TJ fight, because, God, if Marlon Moraes or Rafael Sanzao win and win impressively on February 2nd, and you tell them that they're not getting a title shot, I think it's Moraes has won 16 of 17. Sanzao has won, I think, 11 of 12. Like, mm-hmm. It is a crime that these guys aren't fighting for belts. Okay, fine. It's not a money fight. You got to give them a title shot. So I disagree with you, Greg. Do not do this fight again. I think it's a mistake. Keep it in your back pocket, like Phil said. Let them build up their resumes. And then maybe in 2-3 years, you revisit it with this backstory.
Yeah, and that's what I was trying to say, too, which is I think the better move would be to stay in their own divisions. And then, like Phil said, you know, with the Nate Diaz, Conor McGregor, you could run that whenever you want, and people will be interested.
And you have Rafael Sanzao, who's won 11 of 12, including two fights with Dillashaw
right. That
he already split. So you have a trilogy fight right there. It's an easily marketable fight.
Okay, yes, but here's the thing.
The first one.
No, Sanzao just doesn't have a great personality. Like, no one, right? I mean, it's very hard to sell him. And I know his management team has told him, like, you need to talk more. You need to be more vocal. And the fans just haven't gravitated towards him. So, in a way, like, if Moraes wins, I think now you really have something on your hands. It's a fresh matchup. He's looked great in his last two fights, right? Aljamain knockout and the Jimmy Rivera knockout. If Sanzao wins, I think it's going to be a tough sell.
So you think if Sanzao wins, there's more temptation to bring
up Cejudo? I do. I'm a little worried about
that. That's interesting.
I am.
Waiting for that matchup.
I really feel like there's a lot. And by the way, it's on ESPN Plus here in America.
Yeah, Brazil, February 2nd.
Yes. I really feel like there's a lot at stake in that one. And I wouldn't be surprised if they're waiting for that result to decide what they want to do next with those two guys. But in the end, regardless, I don't have to worry about business. We don't have to worry about business. Don't get rid of the flyweights. Why? At this point, you introduced a new title, right? You actually introduced a new belt.
New belt.
And on the night that you introduced, it's going to be the last time that that particular belt is defended. Can we talk about the new belt for a second?
Yes, please.
Not as bad as people think.
Okay. Thank you, Greg, because I was shocked at the reaction to this.
Me too.
Everyone tells me, like, oh, you care too much about the storylines and the drama and all this stuff. And then on Friday, my entire timeline was just filled with belt talk. You say not as bad. Why?
I just don't think it looks that bad. I think it looks pretty cool overall. Is it amazing? Probably not, but it's just a belt. You know what I mean? And I think people just don't like change. You know, for instance, like, just talking about our job right now, ESPN.com changed a few years ago the total design, and people are freaking out. Now everybody loves it. Mm-hmm. People just don't like the new look. And I think that's what it is with the belt. People are upset right now. They think it looks gimmicky or whatever, but I don't think it looks that bad, and I think people are totally going to come around to it.
Yeah, that was bad radio right there. I pointed at you and gave you a thumbs up to that point, because I think that's what it comes down to. People just hating change. Redesign Twitter, redesign Instagram, and people are looking for fault. Do I think it's the best thing since pre-sliced bread? No, but it makes sense. The UFC is saying they're ushering a new era. ESPN is talking about ushering a new era. Have a new belt? Yeah, maybe it's a little postmodern, and I don't remember what all the intricacies mean and what a red ruby is and a white infinity stone as opposed to that one. There was a lot of thought put into it. Maybe it's a little bit too intricate, but I'm not up in arms about it. I still think the meaning behind the belt is what carries value, and I think it's just because it's new, and if the UFC tried something and it's not a smashing success, people just have a posture of hating on it.
In the post-fight press conference, Henry Cejudo joked about how he won't get a second belt if he wins again. He's just going to get a little ruby or whatever Phil was saying. That is that true? He doesn't get a second one?
That is what I'm hearing. So it does feel like it's a very expensive belt, but it's somewhat of a cost-cutting measure in the sense that if you defend that title multiple times, you're not going to get, you know, like DJ got 10 belts, right? You're not going to get that. You're going to get a ruby to put on your belt. So that feels
like what are you going to do with a dozen belts? How many belts does John Jones have in his house? Or Anderson Silva's got like a little rack of belts.
You wouldn't want all those belts if you want all those fights?
To an extent, but at some point,
give
what are you doing
with them? Give one to your mom, give one to your brother.
Yeah, but he's giving one to his trash man, his milkman.
Yeah. No one's getting up that high. I just feel like, look, it clearly means something to the fighters, right? They like having them on their mantles, whatnot. The ruby thing is a little funky, but I don't think it's that bad. And you know what I really like? I like the flags. You know that whole thing where it's like the first eight?
The original eight.
Yeah, I like that. That's kind of cool.
And how about the second that it got announced, Conor McGregor says, I'll come back for this.
Yeah.
I mean, their biggest name, their biggest superstar coming back.
Well, he gave it the vote of confidence. Clearly, it didn't work.
Didn't have a lot of sway.
Because everyone hated on it. Even the fighters were hating on it. Luke Rockhold was the best comment of them all. saying that who designed that? Reebok? I thought that that was a nice little zinger. But yes, everyone just needs to calm down about the belts, please. I mean, there's more important things out there. And let's talk about one of those more important things. Let's talk about Mr. Conor McGregor. After his fight against Alexander Hernandez, Cowboy Cerrone gets back on the mic and says, give me a title shot or give me Conor McGregor if he wants to grant me, in those words, something like that. Like, I'm paraphrasing, but you get what I'm saying. You in or out on this, Greg? Conor, Cerrone, next fight for both men.
I think this is a great fight for the UFC. All three of you guys were, or both of you guys were at Barclays Center. The second Cowboy got even into the entrance to walk in, the place went crazy. I think it was the best environment for any fight on the night last weekend. So Cowboy just has that it factor, you know, win or lose. I think people just like the, you know, he'll fight anywhere, anytime against anybody, you know, and you're putting him against a guy who's the biggest superstar in the sport. I think it would be huge for the UFC. That said, I think my guy Dustin Poirier needs a shot at Conor. Huh. And I know what happened earlier in the career, but people are still calling for Max Holloway to fight Conor again. You know, so it's like times have changed over the years. Poirier has been amazing recently, and he's just waiting for a fight. And I think Conor Poirier would be the better matchup, in my opinion.
Wow. I did not expect that.
Your boy, Dustin Poirier, is that because you shared an Uber with him once? Is that it?
Wait, what's this? What's this story, Greg?
There's no backstory. I just like him overall.
Well, you said my boy.
Oh, your boy.
No, you said
my boy.
You said my boy. Said, okay.
I don't know about my boy. I do like him as a person. I do like him as a fighter. I mean, everything he's been in has been fireworks. So, I mean, it's just hard to have somebody win that many times in a row and then not give him a real shot. You know, and it's like Cowboy. It's like you look back, like it doesn't feel that long ago that he got, I know weight class differences, but like got knocked out by Darren Till right away. You know, it's like, He's a fan favorite. I don't necessarily think he's the most deserving. Phil? What do you think, Phil?
I mean, of all the Conor options, I don't know if I'd put Poirier in the top five or even top 10. Conor's the ultimate call out. Ally Aquinta's calling him out. Everyone wants that fight because they know it's a guaranteed 1.3, 1.5, was it with Khabib 2.4 million pay-per-view buys. But I am so in on Cowboy against Conor, and we'll find out. When is the hearing? January 29th?
So in 6 days.
Coming up very shortly, we'll find out what the suspensions are for Conor and Khabib. That's another fight. As much as Conor wants the immediate rematch, I don't think that that loses any staying power if, say, Khabib is facing a 12-month ban and Conor's is, say, 6 months for Conor to fight in the interim. I think he looks at a 36-year-old Cowboy Cerrone and says, okay, stylistically, I like myself in that fight, even though now, you know, dad bod, old man strength, Cowboy is apparently a handful.
Right.
He looked phenomenal against Alex Hernandez. But as soon as I saw that fight with Cowboy, the black hat Cowboy, I mean, man, how great of a stylistic matchup would that be? Just stand and trade, the rowdy Irishman, you know, the press conferences leading up with it. Cowboy's all about, don't disrespect me or I'll teach you a lesson. And Conor's the king of disrespect in selling a fight. So at this stage in Cowboy's career, it's got to be title fight, fights toward a title fight, which Alex Hernandez was not matchmaking pro Cowboy. That was very much to build Hernandez,
right?
But Cowboy capitalized on it with a very impressive win, had the best pop of the night in Brooklyn. What an atmosphere there from the time he walked out of the tunnel to obviously when he scored the TKO. So of all the likely Conor fights, I was calling for a Holloway rematch as well, a super fight there. There we go, going right toward the super fight. But if we can't get that, I am in on McGregor Cerrone.
Yeah.
So you're getting me excited about this, Phil. I don't love your idea here, Greg, and I know it's something that's been bandied about, including from Dana White. I feel like we saw that fight, and it didn't go very long.
UFC 178.
Yeah, it was a short fight, and
you don't think they've changed as fighters?
Absolutely. Dustin is way better. He deserves a big fight. But unfortunately, at this juncture, I don't know if that's the one that's going to get people excited because let's say, okay, Conor is the ultimate mainstream MMA fighter, right? That's the one that everyone wants to talk about. So you're going to tell people, okay, Conor's coming back, and oh yeah, he's fighting a guy who he beat in like 90 seconds. It's not going to get people's juices flowing. It's just not. Cerrone is beloved. Mm-hmm. To your point, Phil, like I was actually shocked by the pop in Brooklyn. He's not a New York guy. He doesn't live close to New York. And they just went, you know, it was crazy.
Nothing about Cerrone says New York City.
Yeah, no. And they love the guy. And that made me think it's a very knowledgeable crowd. So I'll say this. Going into that fight, I was not in on this one. I was not in on Cerrone McGregor. I liked what Aquinta was doing. He was sort of baiting Conor in a fun way. I liked that. Obviously, Khabib Ferguson, I feel like we can all agree, is the fight to make next for the belt. They both have earned their
respective
shots.
Put them both in bubble wrap for 10 days leading up to the fight.
Well, my suggestion is, just don't announce it.
Yeah.
Just like the Surprise. Night before, just say this is happening. And everyone's going to buy tickets. I mean, we learned that with 232, right? People will buy tickets in a day. So that's the fight to make. And then, okay, you have to figure out what's next. Give me Poirier versus Iaquinta. All right, give me that one. I think that that makes sense. It's fresh. Mm-hmm. And give me McGregor versus Cerrone, but I'm throwing out a caveat, okay? Because you, Phil, did a great job of getting me excited as you were talking about it. I was very disappointed in Donald Cerrone on Saturday night, and I'll tell you why. His whole demeanor is, okay, everyone's loving him. Everyone's cheering him on. Connor, I'd love to fight you if you'd give me that chance. He spoke to Brett afterwards backstage, Brett Okamoto, and he was like, well, this is Connor's world. You know, if he wants to give me that opportunity, you know, I'd love to fight him. It'd be an honor to fight him. What is that, Connor? I mean, really? Cowboy Cerrone, go back to that press conference when they met, the whole Red Panty Night press conference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It started because of Cerrone.
Yeah.
Cerrone was the one talking smack. Cerrone was the one saying, you've never fought anyone. Cerrone was the one saying, you know, oh, you want to come up to 155? Come fight me.
And Connor wasn't even looking at him.
Exactly.
He looked straight ahead and was
That's
talking trash.
That's the one. This whole Cowboy Cerrone shtick where it's like, oh, it's an honor, Mr. McGregor, to fight you. If you'd give me that chance, I want nothing to do with that. If that's the way it's going to be, give me Dustin Poirier. I don't want that. What is that all about? How did Nate get the fight against Connor initially, UFC 196? It's because he went out there and went on the microphone on Fox and said, you're taking everything I work for, MF, for all that stuff and more, right? Connor doesn't respond. Connor tweeted him back, right? We all saw that.
Mm-hmm.
But he tweeted him before he spoke. I wouldn't be surprised if Connor looks at that, you know, the post-fight interview, the backstage interview, and is like, well, this is just like, this is like a wet noodle. Like, this does nothing for me. You need a little oomph.
So does it scare you how he handled the Alex Hernandez lead up when he was kind of baiting him and Cowboy just said, I'm not going to talk.
But that's different. You know, you could tell that Cowboy was upset. You could tell that he was fired up. You could tell that he was annoyed by that talk.
Mm-hmm.
In this particular case, it's almost like he's coming out, like, it reminds me, what's that movie, Willy Wonka? Like, can I get the lottery ticket, please? You know, can you bestow this honor upon me to fight you? That doesn't get me excited. Who wants to see that? We've seen this before, like, when Yancy Medeiros fought Cerrone, what was the narrative? Oh, he respected him too much. When Pat Barry fought Mirko Krokop, what was the narrative? He respected him too much. I don't want to see that. I want to see someone come after Connor and say, look, you haven't won a fight in almost 3 years at this point. I will rid our sport of you. I'm going to kick your butt. That's what I want to see.
Do you think partially that Cerrone reaction was because in that moment, he's on the top of the world, everyone's loving on him, and it would have been a pretty stark emotional turn to get fired up and call out Connor and point the finger that if we get to a fight announcement and fight buildup, that would turn the second Connor disrespects him an oppressor?
It's possible, and I know what people are going to say. Cowboy's staying true to himself. He's not that kind of guy. Look, I'm not telling you to fabricate anything, but don't give me this it would be an honor to fight you stuff.
Right.
Connor's not going to do that, and no one wants to hear that. You could be cool. You could say, like, hey, Connor McGregor, partner, I'm waiting for you. That's all you need to say. But this, it's an honor to fight you if you give me the opportunity, it just does nothing for me. It really doesn't. It's a buzzkill.
Well, and he said after the fight about Hernandez, I wanted to teach him to show some respect.
Yeah.
So I think that is very much still in Cowboy. I just think in the moment, pardon the Cowboy pun, it was a little bridled.
Okay.
And that if we get, I just couldn't resist.
No, it's good.
If we get to a fight announcement and fight buildup, I think that changes. It was a leading question the way I asked it to you because I really do think it will. I think you're right. I think he missed the opportunity to really get Connor riled up and drive demand for that fight. But I think the second Connor pulls a Red Panty Night line again, Cowboy will respond. It's all hypothetical right now.
Though. Right. So if you're the UFC, you obviously want Connor McGregor to get back on track, right? You need Connor to start winning again because at some point, you know, it's going to lose its luster, this whole thing, right? You need the guy to get a W here and there. Do you like this matchup to get him that W?
Yes.
Connor Cowboy, yeah.
Connor Cowboy, yes.
I think stylistically, Connor would be able to get him into a stand-up-only fight, very similar to what he was able to do to Eddie Alvarez, keep it on the feet, and that left hand will find a home.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say, which is just, you know, this isn't going to go to the mat. I think it's just going to be a striking battle between the two of them, and Connor is younger and just has better striking skills. So I think it would be a good matchup for him to go in right away before facing a Ferguson or a Khabib.
And I want to make clear, like, I'm not trying to hate on Cerrone. I love what he's doing. I love the narrative that he's putting out there. I love the story of him coming down to 155, being a dad, mm-hmm. finally caring about the belt, finally putting it all together, leaving Jackson Wink. I mean, everything that he's doing is great. The post-fight stuff kind of bummed me out a little bit. And I'll also add, The one thing that I'm curious, and it's not a knock on the fight, and it's not a knock on making the fight, I'll just say that historically, Cowboy Cerrone has had a tendency of crumbling under the pressure. He gets to the main event and he loses, right? I remember when he fought RDA, he lasted just a minute. Mentally, you know, Nate Diaz, mentally, he gets to that big fight after a long streak and he loses. This is the biggest fight ever. This is bigger than any title fight. So I'm curious if the new Cowboy results in a Cowboy who's mentally stronger as well. I think that's a nice little wrinkle.
Right, yeah. I thought that was interesting in Brett Okamoto's story last week where he just talked about how Cowboy has this new mentality. And it just, he's not going to fight anybody on, you know, two fights in less than a month like he's done in the past, you know? I do like this new mentality. He seems more focused and he really showed it this weekend.
And a guy who has the record for wins and the record for bonuses, what's his bonus, like $1.3 or $1.4 million dollars in bonuses over the course of his career, which in 50 or 60 or $75,000 increments, if you're going back old school, comparatively small increments, a guy who's had that many bonuses, I wouldn't hate to see him get a payday on the way out, even if I thought it would be a loss inside of 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah. $100,000 this weekend.
He got two bonuses,
two
right?
Two bonuses.
That's right, a performance and fight of the night.
But I'm saying if you put him on a pay-per-view with Connor with pay-per-view
points.
Oh, man, yeah.
It'd be insane.
Red Penny night.
That's one of the few non-title fights that the UFC can headline a pay-per-view with these days. Like, Connor could headline any show, obviously, but they have this rule where they need a title fight to headline a pay-per-view. To me, you can sell out T-Mobile Arena. You can do well over a million. Connor, Cerrone, given their fan bases, I think it would be a lot of fun. Greg Hardy, you want to see him fight again in the UFC?
I do. I actually didn't think he looked that bad this weekend. You know, you could just see he's very athletic, and he's really scary when you look at him in person. I mean, it's crazy. He's such a big dude. I think the finish that he had there, the disqualification, was interesting. I saw a lot of people claim he did it on purpose. I don't think he did it on purpose. I think it's just inexperience showing. You know, he did get a little frustrated when Crowder called him out there. I thought that was an amazing 10 seconds of back and forth between those two. I think the disqualification was just inexperience, didn't know what to do in that situation and got a little frustrated. But I think Dana said this after, that he showed that he was a true fighter. He still has a lot to work on, I think, but there is potential there, I think.
So if you're the UFC, you're keeping him around?
I would. I mean, you could also see, just in terms of, you know, I don't want to say he's a star, but you could tell just based on numbers for ESPN.com, people who tuned in, people still care about Greg Hardy.
People do.
Yeah.
You would know better than both of us.
Yes. You know, the one story we did on Greg Hardy had really great numbers overall. You know, it's like people care about Greg Hardy and people want to see, like Dana said, leading in, like, go see him get knocked out. You know, people want to see it.
Yeah, I thought that line could have been a little bit more tactful, but I think there is a little bit of truth behind it. People do like to see the villain, and everyone, aside from Cerrone, the biggest pop was probably for Crowder in Brooklyn. I mean, fans were really starting to get behind him, especially when he won a short exchange or two. I think Greg Hardy showed the potential in the octagon to be a legitimate heavyweight. It goes back to Ken, alleged or convicted, I'll say convicted, that's factual, convicted violent men be redeemed through violent acts? Should he be in the UFC in the first place? If we say, yes, he deserves to be there, then I think he showed enough potential to be on cards elsewhere. I don't think co-main events the position. I think you put him on, if they put him in Fortaleza, Brazil, like, people would still have tuned in. What frustrated me about the decision to put him in Brooklyn is it detracted from a number of other great storylines on the card, and it was unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
They could have put him in Prague. They could have put him in Wichita, even on a Fight Pass portion of the show and hoping to drive some subscriptions there. And he would have demanded enough eyeballs to see what can this guy do, or, man, I hope he gets his, you know what, knocked out. So I think given the potential he showed in the first 5 minutes of the fight, I agree, Greg. I don't think the disqualification was a result of malice in terms of him intentionally breaking a rule. I think it was an experience. You see guys all the time. The savvy fighter will pull up a grounded opponent and knee him on the way up. Hardy hit the knee, and then you could see as soon as it connected, like, I threw it too early. And it was a matter of inexperience. So I think he can be a bona fide heavyweight given his athletic potential. I think the UFC will put him on another show, and I would just hope it's in a more more thoroughly thought out, planned with ESPN position rather than in Brooklyn, especially juxtaposed to Rachel Ostovich and all that she was going through.
Yeah, it kind of just bummed me out that we had to talk about him so much last week. And I know people will say, why are you focusing? The majority of interviews that I did about this card, people are asking me about him and whether he should be on the card and how I feel about it. And it just felt like there was enough to talk about. Debut, milestone for the sport, milestone for ESPN. That wasn't the best of MMA. That certainly wasn't the best of the UFC. Why would you put him in the co-main event? I would have even felt a little bit better, even though I don't think he should have been on the card in general, if it was, you know, the curtain jerker. Mm-hmm. Why did it have to be the co-main event? Why? You know what I mean? And quite frankly, if I'm one of those other fighters, I'm looking, you know, Ally Quinta told us this on the pre-show. I feel disrespected that he's in the co-main event. That's a spot that a lot of people covet. That's a big spot to be in, especially for this big show and all those people watching. So it just, you know, look, I'm not surprised that Dana White afterwards said he did good things. He's going to be back. When you criticize Dana, he comes back and doubles down, right? That's just his MO. That's who he is, and God bless him for it. But they've got a lot of work to do with this guy. He is very raw. Like you said, Greg, he is talented. There's no doubt about it. But those skills are incredibly green. You know, he has a lot of work to do, and I don't think he did that on purpose. I don't think he's a dirty fighter. I don't think he's a dirty athlete. He said it himself. As a football player, he wasn't dirty. But I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't even know that rule. Or wasn't even thinking at that point. Clearly, he was very tired. He just hasn't been doing this. Mm-hmm. And when you look, they should have put him LFA once, that island fight show. Build him up. Give him some time. What are you rushing the guy? He's 3-0. This show didn't need, this show would have done the same subscriptions, in my opinion, without Greg Hardy. It didn't need him. Put him somewhere where you need him.
Mm-hmm. Prague.
Any one of those cards.
I mean, well, any one of those cards that you look at the roster, people start not having Wikipedia pages after the co-main event.
Right. That's what you should do with a guy like Greg Hardy. You don't need to add him on top of a card like that. So I have no problem with him coming back. At this point, I feel like the train has left the station as far as the debate whether or not he should be in the UFC or MMA is concerned. It's just, can we just use him the right way? You know what I mean? Don't force him down our throats. Put him in the right spots. Build him up. And then maybe you got something with the guy.
That's what I was going to say too, which is like, I think people need to move on from whether he should be in it or not. Because we've already debated that a million times.
Sure.
He has, you know, a really troubled past, but it's not worth debating at this point. Dana put him in there. He put him in the co-main event of the first card on ESPN. So clearly they see big things out of him, and he doesn't plan on stopping using him.
See, I'll be the one contrarian voice on that topic. I think it still is worth debating whether or not he should be in the UFC because people are still continuing to debate. Now, do I think it'll have any effect? No. But I still think it's worth the question.
Because of his background?
Because of his background.
Okay.
And
that's fair.
Because if should he be given a second chance? And the bigger question, there's a great documentary, a Muay Thai documentary on Showtime called Prison Fighters, where convicted criminals in the Thai prison system are able to fight in Thai boxing for their freedom. If you haven't seen it, you should check it out.
But it's made by Phil's brother-in-law, so that's a little plug there.
Also the producer for the 30 for 30, Chuck Restito.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Yes. I didn't know that. So, what's his name?
Micah Brown.
Okay.
But it's a great doc.
Give the guy a shout out.
Give it a look.
Is his brother-in-law like your wife's brother?
My wife's brother.
Wow.
So the,
who knew?
But the question there is that was posed in that documentary is, can violent men be redeemed through violent acts? Is mixed martial arts a way to take someone who had a violent past, or in Greg Hardy's, I keep saying alleged. Can we say that? Because it was convicted. He was convicted, yep. but later
he was convicted
expunged.
In a bench trial.
Yes.
And then
wanted the jury trial
in North Carolina.
Out of court settlement with the accuser. And then, but it has been expunged from his record. I'm just
that is correct.
Trying to say it all accurately.
No, you got it right. You got it right.
So can a person with that track record be redeemed through a violent sport?
Okay. Answer the question. What do you think?
I think there are circumstances where it can be, yes. So I still think it's worth debating in terms of Greg Hardy every time he goes out. I mean, it is a bit of a scarlet letter, and I don't think that's unfair that anytime he comes out, should this guy be in the UFC? And that's the issue in the NFL as well. You see guys who are, he was given a second chance because he was an all-pro defensive lineman.
Right.
If he was a fringe player, if he was an average NFL player, I don't think any team would have signed him. And you see that across the board. Why is Kareem Hunt getting a second chance and Ray Rice not? I know we're leaving the MMA sphere here, but I think it all came down to his athletic potential. as to why he was given a second chance. You hate to see that as the gauge.
Right.
But I think since so many people are asking that question, it's fair for us in this format to ask the same question, even if we have that conversation 4 or 5 fights down the road. I don't think it's to a point where it's like, that ship has sailed.
Fair enough. Right. I couldn't agree more. And I think it's great that you bring that up. I want to ask you guys this question. If Greg Hardy was a guy, I think he lasted 6 or 7 seasons in the NFL. If he was a guy that just had a Pro Bowl career, the exact same career that he had, but none of the other stuff, right? The violence in his personal life. 6, 7 years and then decide I'm going to come to MMA, I'm going to try it out. Would he have been in the co-main event?
No. And that's where
isn't that weird?
That's what bothers me a little bit. It bothers me a lot of it, actually.
Yeah.
That it's his violent past and his conviction is what essentially gave him this platform. Because there are a lot of guys in the UFC with NFL cups of coffee.
Yep.
It's a shorter list of guys who were, I think he made it to 1 Pro Bowl, but still a Pro Bowl caliber player. If it were Tom Brady making the jump to MMA, he'd be in the co-main event. But a Pro Bowl caliber defensive lineman with Greg Hardy's NFL resume, 3 fights into his MMA career, would not be in the co-main event in Brooklyn.
That's
weird. It's because of the controversy in the signing.
You agree, Greg?
Yeah, I would agree, because there are a lot of Pro Bowlers out there. He was a very good player, but it's not like he was Tom Brady or something like that switching over to MMA. So, I mean, I think a very good player going into another sport would draw eyeballs, but I think it's just his whole checkered past. He was in mainstream media at that time for what he did, and I think it did contribute to where he was in this card.
So we'll see what the UFC does with Greg Hardy, what card they put him on next, against who, and where on the card. I think will be very interesting. Now let's stick with the heavyweights here, and let's turn our attention to Saturday night, Inglewood, California. Bellator is back. It feels like we haven't talked about Bellator in a while. Their last show was in mid-December, that great Hawaiian show, the 2 shows on the same weekend. They are back, and they are finally wrapping up the Bellator Heavyweight Grand Prix. It's Ryan Bader against Fyodor Emelianenko, a.k.a. Fedor Emelianenko, as you Americans like to call him. I'm part Yoder. Russian. Yes. Oh, very nice. Greg, before we talk about the fight, how do you feel about the Grand Prix? It's coming to an end, right? No one got injured. All the fights that were supposed to happened. It wasn't like the Strikeforce Grand Prix where Daniel Cormier came in as an alternate. Overall, was it a success for Bellator?
I would say it is a success. I don't know the actual numbers in terms of how they did, whether it would have been that much better than one-off fights, but I do like the format. I think Bellator needs to do some extra things, you know? And I think a heavyweight Grand Prix was a really good idea. And like I said, nobody got hurt and really showcased a bunch of different fighters there. So, I'm excited by this weekend's fight. And, I think they did a good job going in.
I think it was a success in that it drove up demand. I don't think Mitrione Nelson drives the same demand if it's not a part of a Grand Prix or Bader Mitrione, which is a fine fight. So anytime it elevates the demand of the quarterfinal and semifinal fights, to me, that's a success. We're giving purpose to a lot of guys who are past their prime. Bader, I think, was the youngest fighter in the field by 3 years, and he was 33 or 34 at the start of it. So you have guys who are in the twilight of their career who are given a higher platform and marginally driving up interest. So for me, that's check, check, check. And so thumbs up there, and part of me is excited to see Fyodor Saturday night at the Forum in Inglewood. Against Ryan Bader, mostly because Bader was my pre-tournament pick to win on ESPN.com.
Oh, really? Who's your pick?
I brought receipts, actually.
Wow.
I can't remember. Here you go. Here you go, Greg. I got, and I'm
look
handing
this
out papers
I went
the
with
the date highlighted.
Matt Mitrione.
Mitrione was a popular pick. I think Bredos went with Frank Mir.
So this is, okay, so let me just paint the picture here. This is January 14th, 2018.
Yes.
So
more than a year ago.
A little over a year ago. The field, by the way, in case anyone forgets, Frank Mir, Ryan Bader, Fedor Emelianenko, King Mo Lawal, Matt Mitrione, Roy Nelson, and of course, Chael Sonnen and Rampage Jackson. Brett Okamoto picked Matt Mitrione. Rosenstein picked Matt Mitrione. Murphy picked Bader.
Ryan Bader.
Now, can I just say something? I feel like Bader was the favorite. Was he not?
He was. Was he plus 240?
Can't remember. I know.
Fyodor was plus 600.
Ryan Bader was plus 240?
At the onset of... I think Mitrione was the betting favorite, actually.
Really?
I think he was.
Wow, I'm surprised.
And Bredos went with Frank Mir. Eric Tomiso,
yeah,
respected MMA mind at ESPN, went an alternate. He went with the Daniel Cormier route, but he said if not Mitrione, yeah, that one's on the back. It's a two-sided printer. I'm going green.
Look at you.
Yeah.
Okay, he said alternate if not Matt Mitrione and Max Berto's pick Frank Mir. So in fact, you are the only one.
Only one in the survivor pool.
And no one picked Fedor.
No one picked Fedor.
Which is interesting in its own right.
He had just lost to Mitrione.
That's right.
Not long before this. So I think that loss was still fresh in people's minds.
This is the most Phil thing ever, though, to print out.
I love it.
I bring
correct
receipts.
Choice.
I appreciate that. I like it because I think a lot of the people listening probably don't know this or remember it. Here's the thing. Did you want to say something?
I was going to say the most Phil thing ever would be to print it on a tank top and wear that.
Or that, yes. Oh, do you have God. It under your shirt?
I do not. No. Okay. Man, that would have been a great move.
That would have been. Although this is audio, so it doesn't
yes,
really matter.
Yes, I have it. Everyone
looks. Right. Here's the thing. I think it has gone well. I think that all the fights ended up, you know, the results actually ended up probably, if they were being honest, the way they wanted them to. My one complaint, and the main event, by the way, is a great matchup, right? It's Bader, the 205 champion going up, and it's the legend, Fedor. He's looked great in the tournament, turning back the clock, et cetera, et cetera. My one complaint, I mean, just look at the date. This is January 14th when you guys wrote this of last year.
It has taken
and
a
they
while.
Announced it several months
well
prior. It just feels like, guys,
lost a little steam.
Yes. Look, the best part of this tournament was that one night, or that one weekend, I should say, in October, when it was Mitrione Bader Friday night here in Connecticut, and then Fedor Sonnen on Long Island.
An hour and a half away.
That felt like NCAA tournament, right? It felt like, okay, this is the semifinals, the winners. But that was, what, 3+ months ago? It feels like the whole thing just took too long. And that's my problem. It shouldn't have taken this long. I know you have to give the guys a chance, but what I would have done is have all the first round matchups on the same night, have all the second round matchups on the same night, and then you get to the finals, right?
And then you can schedule it too. So if both guys come out with a clean bill of health, all right, we're doing this again in 3 months.
Yeah.
Rather than predetermining all the dates. And also, you mentioned that card in Hawaii. Like, that was such a great atmosphere there for Limale McFarland.
Right.
And I think they really missed some momentum there. We lost some momentum coming out of that because that card, that event was a big win for Bellator. And now we pause, and it's been 5-6 weeks since we've had another fight. And it feels like every time they're starting with no momentum.
When they did the Strikeforce Heavyweight Grand Prix, they had all the first round matchups, or the majority of them, at least two on the same night. So, like, at least you have something going on early, you kick it off, and there's some momentum. It just feels like, and it kind of honestly feels like they're doing the same mistake with the Welterweight Grand Prix. There's no rhyme or reason for when these fights are happening. So there's no momentum whatsoever. Doesn't it feel like we kind of fizzled our way to this final?
Yeah, I mean, it's just hard because of the potential injuries for these guys. But, I mean, I don't know. I think you're right. I think the best thing to do would have been to stack the fights all on one weekend and have it play out like that.
But for the potential injuries, it's not as though you had to label January 26th as your championship date. Like Ariel's saying, even at the same weekend,
sure,
you could hold off, see how the guys are doing, clean bill of health, and say, okay, 12, 16 weeks from now, we'll do the final. So that way, in a perfect world, you get all three rounds of the tournament in 6 months as opposed to almost 13.
Right.
Right.
I don't see the need to drag this out as long as they have. And I think they wanted it to start at the Forum last January, which is where it did, Rampage Sonnen. And they wanted it to end at the Forum. But to me, a year, it doesn't feel like a tournament anymore. It just feels like a bunch of fights where, look, every division is a tournament in a weird way, right? Like every division, you're fighting two guys to eventually... This is kind of the way the old UFC was, and then they eventually fight the next two guys and contenders. So it doesn't feel as much like a tournament. So that's my one issue with all this. In the end, they got to the best main event I think that they could possibly make, given the brackets. It just feels like it fizzled to the final.
I don't disagree that it was stretched out too long, but I will say on the point of every division is kind of a tournament, we hear the same thing in college football. We don't need to expand the playoff. Mm. The playoff is – the regular season is a playoff.
Right.
I think that is a little bit of a cop-out. For me, had this just been your number 3 heavyweight versus number 6 heavyweight, and maybe the next guy gets a title shot, maybe not, we don't really know, I wouldn't have been as interested. But now that you told me, semifinal, I'm in, I had to watch.
Now right. My question is, do you think somebody like the UFC would ever consider doing it? Because if you look at the lightweight division,
Brett called for
like
this.
That,
he called for a lightweight Grand Prix.
Well, okay, there he goes. So the lightweight division is just so stacked. I mean, I think that would be amazing if you don't know the exact matchups and it's all based on performance. I mean, what do you think?
I would like for them to do it. Why they won't do it. Because it
would
be copying these guys, right? It's not like Bellator invented the Grand Prix or the tournament, whatever you want to call it. But now in this era, is very much a Scott Coker thing, and I don't think the UFC would ever be seen or want to be viewed as copying Coker.
But can we dream for a second? I have a note on my phone. Greg, can you confirm this is December 16th, 2018?
I see something about tank tops.
Oh, you do
above
not.
It? Above it?
Right here. Lightweight Grand Prix.
Lightweight Grand Prix.
When I saw Brett tweet about this.
Wait, let me see this.
Yeah.
What's this?
This is a note on my phone. I saw Brett tweet about a lightweight Grand Prix and how the UFC would never do it, but they should.
Way down. Wow. Okay. There it is.
And so, lightweight Grand Prix. And so I texted you all excited. I wanted to do a story about it, which you didn't do, but we still should.
Wow. Why didn't you do it, Greg?
I can't remember that far back. Timing, timing issue.
Go ahead.
Listen to this feel you could conceivably have in a lightweight Grand Prix. And this is all assuming, let's say Khabib gets a crazy suspension, like 18 months. I don't think that's likely. But let's say he does, and your belt is on the shelf for 18 months. That opens up the door where there's an argument to be made that it could happen. My 1v8, and again, this is a month ago, so some of these guys may have had results since then. Tony Ferguson against Kevin Lee. That's your 1v8. 2v7, McGregor Iaquinta. Already built-in storyline there. Your 3-6 is Poirier Pettis. There you go, Rosie. And your 4-6, Barboza Gaethje.
Mm. Which is happening.
And so maybe it's a secret Grand Prix.
Wait, and your you did this before that fight was booked.
I did. Yeah,
wow.
Edited December 16th. Your alternates, featherweight champ Max Holloway, because it'll be easier for him to get on weight, and Jose Aldo, depending on if he's needed. So this is me dreaming and hoping. The UFC would never do it, and I think Ariel, you know, Brett's vision for this is exactly right, that they wouldn't do it because they never do this, but to your point, they'd be looking like they're copying Bellator.
Right.
But how compelling would that be?
And by the way, I want to remind you that the initial plan for the event in LA in August was actually to do a four-man tournament, Conor, Nate, GSP, and Khabib. So it wasn't as grandiose, and I don't know if they would actually dub it as a tournament, but that was the plan. Mm. And then eventually GSP said, I don't want to fight Nate, and the whole thing kind of fell apart. So listen, I love it because it's clean. There's no way out, right?
Yeah.
You win that fight, you know who you're fighting next. You can't negotiate and hold out and things like that. So I like it. I just don't foresee them doing it. I think it's great that Bellator is doing it. It might be a little weird if Chael just said to me, if Fedor loses, he thinks he's going to retire. Do you guys believe this? I feel like we've been talking about Fedor retiring for like the last 5 years.
Right.
And
since he lost to Verdum, basically.
But even like how the last two fights went, even if he loses to Bader, I don't see a real need for him to retire, right?
He's built some momentum.
Yeah.
I mean, I have no idea how the guy's doing financially. He still seems to enjoy it as much as he rarely smiles.
He's doing well financially.
So, you know, if he's just, you know, his middle distance stare, walking down, throwing rights, I don't see why he wouldn't do it again.
Yeah.
I
was just going to say, I do like, even though I agree with you that it did take a long time to get to this point, I do like switching up the formats a little bit and trying something new. I mean, I went to PFL earlier this year and did a story on two fights in one night in their semifinals, you know, and people can criticize that format a little bit. It's not perfect. You know, if somebody gets injured or, you know, they have a rule where if you don't win the first round and it ends up 1-1, the winner of the first round moves on. And there's a lot of kind of quirky things like that, but at least people are trying different things.
I agree with that. Especially for Bellator, back in the day in Strikeforce, they had women's MMA, and that was what differentiated them from the UFC. Now they can't do that anymore, so the tournaments should be something that they need to get behind. I just don't like how they spread them out.
Mm-hmm.
That's my only beef.
Right.
If Bader wins on Saturday, Greg, being a double champ in Bellator, does it mean anything to you?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, I'm sure he wanted to be that point with the UFC. You know, a lot of people still think the UFC is the number one organization for this, but I'm being nice here. But yes, being a double champion at Bellator should mean something. Do you agree, Phil?
Well, and in a thinning light heavyweight division, you look at Ryan Bader and say, okay, at 205, where does he rank among the best light heavyweights in the world? Top five, top four?
100%.
Absolutely.
Right.
So being a double champ there, I think, creates some demand, and it all comes down to how much can Bellator capitalize on that. It totally, if it hadn't already, confirms it was the right decision for him to jump ship and go to Bellator. So credit to him for that. So I think it means something, but I mean, how much did it mean for David Branch to be a double champ in WSOF? It means more in Bellator.
It
means more in Bellator, but it's a step down. Absolutely.
Right.
It's in that vast spot in between. I do think it's marginally closer to the UFC than it would be to being WSOF. All due respect.
No, I couldn't agree more. I do feel like there's some poetic justice there. I remember UFC 187, Daniel Cormier just beat Rumble Johnson. Yeah. He's at the press conference, And he says, there's a guy who's been disrespectful towards me throughout the lead up to this fight. I want Ryan Bader next. I want the easiest fight in the division.
And Bader was in the room.
He was in the room.
Started shouting at him.
He walked right up to him.
Yeah.
I want the easiest fight in the division. I never forget it. It was a great promo, and I thought, man, you got to make this fight now. And they never made it. They were supposed to fight, if you recall, they were supposed to fight in New Orleans. Then Jones got in trouble with the hit and run, so they took DC out of that fight, mm-hmm. and they put him in the title fight against Rumble. He said, I want the easiest fight in the division. Now look at Ryan Bader on the cusp of being a double champ. That's poetic justice. Good for him.
Yeah.
If he pulls it off, I think that that's a little bit of a middle finger towards the UFC.
Yeah.
Trust me, they could use Ryan Bader right now. They could use him as a light heavyweight contender. He would be a nice little addition to that. I mean, I would love to have seen Bader versus DC. I wouldn't mind seeing Bader versus John Jones too at this point. They fought so long ago, mm-hmm. UFC 126. It'd be a nice, a nice little guy to have in your weight class. Speaking of heavyweights, let me ask you about Jack Swagger, aka Jake Hager. A great feature on him on ESPN.com. Mm-hmm. Let's give a shout out to our guy, Tim Fioravanti.
Correct.
Did I say that correct?
Yep. Fast and confident. You got it.
Okay. What does that mean?
Just say it fast and confident.
Oh, yes. Fioravanti.
No one will question you.
That's right. That's right. What is our level? So we've seen this now a couple times. We saw it with Brock. We saw it with Punk. Others have Batista tried it. He's not quite Punk in the sense that he has that amateur background. Phil, what is your level of interest in Jake Hager, a.k.a. Jack Swagger, making his Bellator and MMA debut?
Not much. I mean, I'm not much of a WWE guy, so I need to put that out there. But it's not like when Brock was coming up and you saw his collegiate credentials and said, okay, this guy could be a menace at the top level if he can learn to roll out of a knee bar and things like that. But who's he fighting? J.W. Kaiser?
Yeah.
Sounds like a...
I mean, they're giving him...
0-1.
Right. Yeah,
it's a guy who's 0-1, and is that loss is in the Kansas City Fighting Alliance. I mean,
the highly prestigious.
Yeah. If he sees me in the Power and Light District in Kansas City, he would put a quick whooping on me. I'm sure he's a qualified
double
fighter
champ
for that level, but
what's that?
What do you think about being a double champ in the Kansas City Fighting Alliance?
That's probably a step below.
maybe a little bit below. But I say all that to say, I mean, what's Jack Swagger's ceiling?
Yeah.
And that's how I'm going to look at it, because again, I'm not a WWE or even ECW.
Had you ever
guy.
Heard of him? Prior to him announcing that he was coming to MMA.
When you sent me the text with his name, I said, that guy's a professional wrestler. I couldn't pick him out of a lineup.
Wait, so you didn't know that this guy was making his debut this Saturday?
No.
That story didn't cross your...
Nope.
Wow. Okay, so this is not a big deal at all.
Not to me.
Okay, so you're not a professional wrestling guy.
No.
But I'm assuming you knew that CM Punk was going to make his UFC debut. You heard about that.
Yes.
Do you think this is more of a UFC indictment or a Bellator indictment or just an indictment on Jack Swagger, the star / non-star?
I mean, I don't know what his cachet was in WWE.
He was not a tag team champ. He just wasn't that popular. He was, a champion at one point, but he wasn't a draw like Punk was or Brock was.
So I don't know how many people are going to be. You'll get a couple WWE fans to say, okay, can this guy really fight? It's his pro debut. It's his first shot. It's a guy, a 41-year-old who's 0-1 as a pro who he's fighting against. It's the right opponent. And I'm not saying Bellator shouldn't make the fight, because all things considered, that card. I mean, you have Pico Corrales, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a great nickname, by the way. Okay, Corrales.
It's a great nickname.
Love that nickname. Pico Corrales, obviously the main event, which we've already talked about.
Good main card.
So after that, we could use some depth. And if you're going to put a guy on there who's going to drive some extra eyeballs, it's the right move. But for me, it wouldn't be appointment viewing.
I'll preface this by saying I'm not also a WWE fan, really. I've been to a few nights recently. And it was a lot of fun, but I didn't really know Jack Swagger. I do work near a couple of people who are obsessed with WWE, and when this was announced, it was a pretty big deal for them. I think to me, it kind of comes back to CM Punk. Like, I know they have different backgrounds, but it's like he ended up being probably the biggest joke in history of the UFC. Would you say that? He's still being made fun of for that.
Oh, I wouldn't say biggest in history. Randy Couture, boxing.
James Toney.
Yeah, James Toney.
All right. Okay, fine. That's fair. But like... What happened out there for him in those two fights, it was a moral victory for him just to even be in there. You know what I mean? So I'm curious to see how another guy who goes from the WWE does in MMA. I think he's going to be a lot better just because he has that background, right? He was an All-American at Oklahoma,
mm-hmm.
Wrestler. So you see obviously a lot of wrestlers transition to MMA and they do great. Obviously look at Cormier and all those guys. So I wouldn't say he's going to be a superstar right out the gate, but I definitely think he probably has some potential just with that base there. And I think they did a good job actually giving him a nobody opponent that he could go in and hopefully ragdoll. Because it's just, I always go back to that, speaking of Aaron Pico, like Aaron Pico, Zach Freeman, I mean, and they gave him a semi-legitimate fighter to go against in his debut, and it all backfired.
Yeah.
So it's like you gotta ease these guys in there.
I couldn't agree more. I have no problem with the opponent. I have no problem with him trying out. I will say, though, I spoke to him around a month and a half or so ago on my show. He didn't do a great job. So he came on my show, my old show, to announce that he was coming to MMA. And so that was cool. And so a year later, almost to the day I spoke to him, after the training camp had started and he had been training for a year, I got to be honest, he didn't do a great job of convincing me that this is something that he is passionate about and that he really is dead set on being successful in. Mm-hmm. And the big question for me is, does he like to get punched? And he kind of joked that he doesn't like to get punched in sparring. Well, it's different when you're in a fight, right?
Yeah.
Brock, the knock on him was always he doesn't like to get punched. And when he gets punched, he changes everything, right? His whole demeanor changes. He looks for a way out. What happens when Jack Swagger gets punched? Now, Brock went right in there. His second pro fight was against Frank Mir. This is a little different. But what happens when he gets punched on Saturday or in the next fight? Does he like it? Does he take to it? Does it make him better? Does it make him stronger? Or does he turtle up? That's my big question. So I'm mildly interested. I mean, I think the whole like gimmick of WWE guy coming over to MMA, you know, it will always be a thing. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to be a tremendous draw for them, you know, like from a ratings perspective. But I feel like there's enough interest. They've done a nice job. They've been doing these video blogs with him this week. I think they've done a nice job, a nice enough job of getting people educated on who he is if you don't know who he is, or just getting people excited about his debut.
Yeah, I didn't mean to rain on the parade.
I respect.
I just want to be honest. Like, yeah. I'd heard the name. I knew he was a former WWE guy. I knew he was making his MMA debut, and I assumed we were talking about him because he was fighting this weekend, so that's why I did my JW Kaiser research and tape breakdown. It was fast. It got knocked out in like a minute.
Look, they want Jack Swagger.
They want him to do well.
Of course.
Has he been training with anybody else?
He's been training in Florida. He kind of created in Tampa his own little team. Is that bad?
I don't think for making his pro debut, I don't think
you would have preferred him to go to like an ATT
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because there's not a lot of people, right? I think Josh Rafferty, who was on the second season of The Ultimate Fighter, has been guiding him. But yeah, you're right. I mean, being around, you know, Greg Hardy is around a lot of pros every day and some big guys. So I'm curious to see how he looks. I think he's going to rely on his wrestling. I think it'll be one of those fights. And I think a lot of people are going to be disappointed because a wrestler like that is not going to, well, watch me be wrong here. I don't suspect there to be like a, you know, 40-second knockout on this one. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, well, John Volante is a wrestler, but he loves to.
That's a little different. Yeah, that's fair. Although by the time that he made it to the UFC, he was a lot more seasoned than, and when I say wrestler, by the way, I'm talking more about the pro wrestler stuff, that's an interesting fight. Pico coming back is interesting. It's nice to have Bellator back, I think. It's been a while since we've had them in the mix. UFC off this weekend. It was supposed to be UFC 233, the Anaheim card that they claim was postponed, yet there's no 233 ever again. So to me, that's a cancellation, but that's neither here nor there. Gentlemen, you did a great job.
Yay.
This has been fun.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Greg, what do you think?
It was a blast.
You didn't sound excited to start. You certainly don't excite.
I had a great time. Always love spending time with you.
Well, I appreciate that. Phil, you just smashed it.
Thank you for
Greg
having me.
Greg was okay, but you smashed it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on Ariel and the Short Guy.
Of course we're talking. Look, we got to stand up for the flyweights, you know? So
that's
you got to
right.
bring me on for that.
Henry Cejudo's doing a lot of good. He's beating the 135-pound champion, like I said. He's going after the divas. He's giving you all you short guys, you know, some hope.
Lord
right?
of the flyweights.
I know. I got to support short people all over the world. So we got to keep the flyweight division.
In all honesty, it was fun to have you guys. Great to talk MMA with all of you. And again, I want to thank everyone who supported the first episode. We'll be doing these every Wednesday evening. And they'll be coming out on the same feed as usual. So if you subscribe to my Monday show, you'll get the show every Wednesday evening. And it's fun to have some new faces and voices in the mix as well. Great stuff, guys. Greg Rosenstein, Phil Murphy, Ariel Helwani. Again, thank you so much for listening. We appreciate it very much. Enjoy the fights this weekend. We will talk to you next Wednesday.